KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Daniel Penny's lawyers portray him as a savior. Prosecutors call him reckless in the chokehold death of an unruly Jordan Neely on a New York City subway train. Closing arguments Monday.
Prosecutors say Daniel Penny, a trained Marine in martial arts, in the kind of hold that he was trying to use, should have found some kind of an alternative means to subdue Jordan Neely. They say it was reckless, and they say that Penny disregarded Neely's humanity.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. Prosecutors will wrap up their summation on Tuesday. When former Kansas City, Kansas police detective Roger Golubsky didn't show for his federal trial for sexually assaulting black women and girls, police went to his place and found him dead from suicide. President-elect Trump hit his social media to announce that he would nominate investment banker Warren Stevens as U.S. ambassador to Great Britain. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
The Packers get ready for Detroit. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers face the Lions Thursday night at Ford Field. I asked quarterback Jordan Love, was it weird holding a Wednesday type of practice on a Sunday afternoon?
Definitely. It was definitely a weird week, and it was weird to wake up and know that there's other football games today. So it doesn't feel like Sunday, but like I said, we're treating it like a Wednesday.
NBA, the Bucks are now 10-9 after beating the Washington Wizards over the weekend. Up next, they host the Detroit Pistons tomorrow night at Five Serve Forum. The Bucks have won six in a row. College hoops, the Badgers with a 74-53 win over Chicago State. Tomorrow night, they'll face the Wolverines at the Kohl Center.
We know now we jump back into deep water Tuesday night with league play opening up, and got a really good Michigan team coming in here. So we'll use Sunday and Monday to prep for that. And get ready to, like I said, jump into Big Ten play.
That's Wisconsin's head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wow, what a ride it's been since Election Day, hasn't it? And I keep coming back to, look, the political theater, all of the you-know-what we're seeing dumping on us every day. America, you knew what you were doing. You knew who Trump was. You know what Trump is. And still decided that cheap gas and or eggs or punishing the other was somehow worth it. And understand, the people who stayed home, this is on you. We knew the Trump base would come out. We knew the Trump voters would come out. And he didn't grow any new support. But he did figure out a way to get you to stay home. So for everyone who stayed home this election, and whatever your rationale was, hope you're going to enjoy the next 4 years. Because if I'm the Democrats, I don't try to block any of his nominees. I think his nominees are who they're going to be. The Republicans are going to have to own what Trump does. There is no opposition. Republicans control everything. So the reality is, if we think Republicans are going to save us, how naive, how cute. Because the reality, and I come back to what I said day one, the solutions will come out of the suffering, the savagery. The people that Trump is nominating, the folks that he's picking to be the heads of every department of our government, the people that they're going to fire and replace with loyalists, all of the horrible stuff that we knew was coming. I told you. I said time and time again, this is what we're going to get, and worse, and we're getting it. We're getting what we knew we were going to get. So I can only say, and again, for all those people, I didn't vote for him, neither did I. But we collectively, as the United States of America, we as a whole, this is the guy. This is the sanctity of the ballot box. This is our system. This is who, evidently, we as a nation are. And the question I have to ask for every person who voted for him, and every person who said, well, I just can't vote for the other one, because basically you were voting for him. Will the suffering of others, will that be enough to quell the suffering of those of you who voted for this mess? Will the big bus that's going to come around and take people who don't look like us and take them away and do horrible things, will that be enough when egg prices don't come down? Look, I keep saying January 21st, I want dollar a buck a gallon gas and 99 cent eggs. We all know that that's not going to happen. We all know with the talk of his tariffs, prices are going to go up. Things are going to get worse. Tax cuts for very rich people are going to happen. But pain and suffering for everybody in the lower half of the economy, because you got Doge Boy who thinks he's going to be able to do with our federal government what he did with Twitter. And that is slash and burn all of the programs that my red hats. And I'll tell you, I am looking forward to hearing those red states who are the welfare states in this country who voted for this disaster. I am waiting to hear their whines and their screaming, because they will be the first, because they're at the margin already. And when you slash and burn federal funding, when you want to go down to the bone and below, as the Doge Boy wants, our co-president, if you will, that's going to mean working people in red states are going to suffer. The very red hat folks who thought Trump's going to bring those egg prices down, we're going to get that cheap gas again, and we'll be able to go after those people. And when those jobs of you know, picking up the eggs and those jobs of going into the field and picking our crops, when those come up, there'll be a lot of chances for folks to go get those jobs that they're so eager to go get. So the question I got, and I come back to this, the question I have, and I want to hear, email me, I want to hear your thoughts. Is the suffering of others, is that going to be enough? Will it be enough to see women and children and families broken up? Will it be enough for our Red Hat Brigade? Especially when it might be them. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I go back to what I was just talking about, the reality. I guess the question we're going to have to ask ourselves over the next 4 years is, you know, will the suffering of others be enough for the people who voted for this train wreck? Will the suffering of others be enough when the suffering comes to them? You know, will their glee that the others will be punished Will that get them through the hard times that are predictably coming, of which they themselves will be harmed by? And do you think they'll learn? I guess that, for me, that the question. And here to share some thoughts on, well, this circus of appointments or nominations. I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So that, for me, is the question. You know, we're going to see a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, and I keep saying the solutions will be in the savagery. All of the horrible that we're going to see over the next 4 years, hopefully we will find the solutions to those things. But, you know, I've been asking that question of my red hat friends. You know, is your hatred of others so great that when it hurts you, you'll be okay with it? And I've gotten mixed reviews.
Yeah, I feel like this is something where folks, the redhead folks, are probably less likely to want to enact their revenge if they're being so harmed that, you know, their bananas are $20 or $30 or whatever.
Or if they got to go out there and pick lettuce themselves.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the people are going to have to start growing their own, you know, Trump tariff gardens in the backyard and figuring out how to, you know, create their own, grow their own lettuce and their own veg and whatnot. So, you know, I think that, especially when you start looking at the, we're going into this whole fight over the budget, and so at the very beginning of the Trump administration, they're going to have a big budget fight, and it's going to be crazy because part of what will go into that will be the mass deportations and, you know, all of these things that are on Trump's agenda, because the only way they can pass that is through a budget reconciliation process. So I think you're going to start to see stuff happening very quickly that is going to start costing folks a lot of money. And we have this idea of, oh, this whole tariff thing is going to take a while because it's got to go through Congress and yada, yada. But there's this sort of battle over it because Trump did it unilaterally in 2018 with the steel tariffs, the steel and aluminum tariffs. So I keep thinking, like, this may happen very quickly.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I agreed with the steel and aluminum tariffs. I think tariffs are not an entirely bad thing. I think they're a strategic tool like anything else. This kind of broad brushing, this kind of everything, this is bad. But I do think the tariffs, because I know where this leads us, to where we completely bastardize the whole idea of tariffs, when in the national interest, in our economic interest, they can be good, just not in this fashion is how I'm looking at it. Or do you disagree?
No, I agree. And I think this idea of just revenge tariffs, where, you know, he wants to institute a 20% tariff increase for Mexico, which, again, means that either we're going to have to find somewhere else to get a lot of our fruits and vegetables, or, you know, I don't know how this works. I mean, I guess we can start getting bananas from other Central American countries, maybe. I'm not really sure.
Or we just don't eat bananas.
But, or we just, you know, don't have bananas. It's not going to be just bananas. It's going to be everything.
Or avocados, you know, because my daughter and I were shopping and I go, hey, look, avocados from Mexico. It says right on there. Yeah. And she's like, well, yeah, maybe I should get some because they're probably going to go away.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I mean, there's this idea that, you know, we're going to set up these huge barriers and these things, these unintended consequences that I think a lot of voters didn't think about. Well, they may come home to roost. And again, I come back to, you know, the solutions will be in the suffering.
Yeah. And I think folks are going to, I really do believe that folks are going to suffer so much that they'll want things to change. I mean, I think it depends, frankly, on how long it takes to go into effect, because I've heard a couple of his, Trump's people say that they were going to try and do this gradually. Like, they're going to institute a 20% tax, but it's not going to be all at once. It's going to be, like, you know, over several years or something like that. That may be the way that it comes in and it isn't such a shock to the system. And if they do it that way, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if people will, you know, get as bent out of shape about it. But I think you know, we've got 2 years until the next election. And if you, I mean, the whole conversation last election was about grocery prices, right? Yep. Like everybody kept asking about the price of eggs and, you know, stuff like that. So if we come up in 2 years and gas prices are higher and egg prices are higher and groceries are higher, I think that's going to be a huge part of the conversation where it's like, we tried to tell you that Trump was going to be bad for this, but none of you listened.
Yeah, no, because look, January 21st, I'm told gas prices are going to be 99 cents a gallon, eggs too. January 21st, I'm waiting for it. Look, I would love to have dollar gas. I would love to have a dozen eggs for a buck. Hasn't happened in my lifetime. Well, what's it been, 30 years since that's been that way? But hey, we've set a bar, and let's see where they get near it.
I was going to say, I remember during the Clinton years, which is when I got my first car, and I paid 97 cents for diesel because wow. I had this Mercedes that was older than me. You know, it was one of the old diesel Mercedes, and it was a tank, right? But I had cheap diesel, so thank you, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, well, you can't give him any credit for anything. But you, what's interesting to me is I'm watching, and look, I'm not a huge Clinton fan, to be honest with you, at all. But
speaking of trade,
yeah.
And screwing workers.
No, because here's the question, though. Does this not break up the NAFTA/USMCA? I mean, because isn't having,
yes,
you know, open trade part of this? So by slapping tariffs, and we did this on Canadian soft lumber, which has, you know, raised the price of lumber, hurt home building prices, a whole bunch of this, because this is what Trump wanted. Isn't this how we end up getting out of NAFTA, which I got to be honest with you, I'm not entirely against.
Well, the theory of USMCA was that was the new NAFTA that was going to, you know, replace NAFTA. And Trump supposedly, you know, negotiated this whole thing. And now he's essentially throwing that away, which I think is why you've got, you know, Mexico and Canada saying, if you're going to institute tariffs on us, we're slapping them on you, too. So good luck with that.
And look, this kind of global trade war. Mm-hmm. And understand, I'm not against the idea of reshoring manufacturing, and you know, I'm a huge proponent of domestic production for domestic consumption, but you can't do that overnight. That yeah. takes a process, a long process, the kind of long process that this country will, in my lifetime, never put up with.
Yeah. I suggest everybody get chickens.
Chickens, okay. Not against it. You know, I know people who have chickens that run around all over the place. They're good for mosquitoes, I guess, right?
I actually have no idea, but they're really good for eggs, for sheep eggs.
Cheap eggs.
They're great for omelets.
So let's talk about the nominations. Kash Patel for FBI director. That's going to be fun and interesting.
You know, I just feel like Kash Patel leading any kind of position that high up in intelligence is going to be a giant shredder truck outside the building, right? Like I have this weird idea in my head that his entire purpose is to completely destroy any evidence against Donald Trump and him too, but also to institute the revenge campaign. And you know, I don't know what that looks like when there's no real evidence that anybody committed a crime, other than I guess he makes it up. And, you know, that generally doesn't help people, I think, in trying to go after somebody. We've talked about this before, where it could just very well be that it's going to be a fight to cost people a whole lot of money. But, you know, the kind of things that the president does, he's been given immunity. Does that mean that extends to Kash Patel? I don't think it does. So, I mean, if Democrats come back by some miracle and win in 2028, does that mean that a bunch of Trump people are going to end up being indicted for some of the stuff that they do that was clearly illegal?
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because, you know, even this process is really, really early. I mean, don't these nominations usually come out right around Christmas when they're thinking about shopping, where we're not, you know, where we don't even really know who they are yet until you look at the middle of January? Isn't this really early?
Yeah, that's been the interesting thing about this. And I think that's how we know that a lot of these appointments are either favors or promises. Typically what happens is the transition team chooses who they want, and then they start the process of an FBI background check. You want to know everything about the person that they've done, good or bad, so that you know what's coming.
Sure.
Right. If there's a huge fight in the Senate or a huge fight in the press, you want to know what that is, so you have an answer for
right.
a lot of that stuff.
So like if there was a nominee who paid off for an affair that he had with a married woman, who claims that he abused her, you could know that earlier.
Right.
And it wouldn't just come out in the press.
In this case, Trump's transition has said that they're going to vet their own people. But I think, you know, for a lot of these folks, we read about Pete Hegseth in particular, where the transition team said that they were completely blindsided by the rape allegation that he had that was filed, and the whole non-disclosure agreement. And I mean, like a lot of things about him that would have turned up in an actual right. background check, whether it was the FBI or not. So I think what's happening with these nominees is Trump is just sort of throwing them out there and announcing them on Truth Social, and they haven't had any kind of vetting whatsoever.
Right. So, you know, to the Hegseth thing, you know, maybe we'd have known that his mother thought he was a horrible person to women as well. Maybe that would have been found out. But here, maybe, and this is where I hope everyone's sitting down. Maybe this is the genius of Donald J. Trump. Maybe the genius is, I've got to do all these favors. I've got all this payback stuff I got to do, all of this posturing and all of the, you know, all this stuff. I've got to throw this out there so that the base goes, oh, he did what he said. You know, he's going after the deep state. And he just throws them out there and they sink or swim on their own. And some of them are not great people, you know, like a guy whose own mother says he's not good for women. So that maybe they do sink and he can go, yeah, I tried. Thoughts?
No, it may very well be that. It may be that he just doesn't care, and he thinks that he owns the Republican Party enough to be able to push through a lot of these people, with Hegseth in particular. You know, I think that the interesting thing that I've heard people say about Hegseth is, you know, the military doesn't have a wokeness problem, but it really does have a sexual assault problem. So to have somebody who has these allegations, who paid somebody off, who made her sign an NDA, you know, that it doesn't look really good. And chances are that that person is going to be brought into the Senate to testify against him. And so, I mean, you think about folks like this and what this looks like in the press, and the whole purpose of Pete Hegseth, you know, paying her off and having her sign an NDA was so that he's made it clear it was the goal was to not get fired at Fox. And so you're like, bro, you completely screwed your position in the cabinet, and now you're screwing yourself at Fox. And so I'm wondering, you know, really, what was the purpose for all of this? Why would he, as an individual, say, yes, I want this, I'm going to accept whatever, you know, huge cabinet post that you give me? So, I mean, it may very well be that Trump's just an idiot and he doesn't know any better, or I don't think that he's some, you know, 4D chess player or something like that. But these nominees should have been smarter, especially somebody who works in the media.
Yeah.
Like, come on, bro.
No, look, I think your first part is right, that he's the thought process was, we're just going to steamroll everything. And we're not doing background checks. There'll be none of this out there. If I can cover my tracks long enough, it won't matter. And look, I don't even think that's gonna torpedo his nomination, because I just think the Republican Party is that weak-kneed. I don't know. I know I have a lot of people saying, oh, there's gonna be a couple Republicans who are gonna thwart this. I don't know, because you brought up the woman who signed the NDA. As soon as she comes to testify in front of Congress, that woman's life is over. Because I think of that Christine Blasey Ford who
right.
had to go into hiding, hire security, her family had to move. They had to do all this stuff because these crazy red hats, the extremists who are the cult part of Trump's support, they will not let her alone, or any of these people alone.
So one of the main differences that I think about with Christine Blasey Ford and the woman who accused Hegseth is that the woman immediately went to the police. She had a rape kit done. You know, there was semen found in her. Chances are they have all of that information and all of that DNA. And so that to me says a lot more. And the fact that he paid her off. Like, this wasn't something where Christine Blasey Ford made these accusations, you know, decades later.
Yeah, you still think they care. That's so cute.
Part of me still believes in the system of justice.
How cute.
I know, right?
There's justice. If there's justice for, there's justice for poor people. They don't get justice. They get brought to justice. And I look at this, you know, obviously today, Jack Smith was supposed to do his due today. All charges dropped with prejudice.
Yeah, without so prejudice. The deadline is Monday for Jack Smith to file his, you know, final stuff and make any requests for Judge Tanya Chutkan on the cases. And he actually filed some stuff last week early. And so I've been curious, like, what else he's going to talk about. If is he going to promise that there's going to be a huge report, you know, stuff like that. So what he asked for was he's dismissing this stuff without prejudice, which means that, again, if the Democrats by some miracle win the White House in 2028, then a new attorney general could reignite these cases unless Donald Trump pardons himself. The thing about Trump pardoning himself is he's going to have to admit to all of the crimes that he committed.
Yeah.
Because if he has not been pardoned for those crimes, like if he pardons himself for stealing the classified documents, but not obstructing justice, right? Then you can come back and indict him for obstructing justice. So he's got to make that admission for everything that he has done, and that has to be public. And he has, you know, I mean, he's basically admitting, I did all of this stuff so that he could then have a pardon.
He can't just say, I absolve myself of all sins.
You know,
like when I went to Catholic school, you used to go and you'd ask, you know, you do confession and they would absolve you of your sins, a couple Hail Marys. You were done. You were good. You slate clean.
Right. 10 Our Fathers and 5 Bloody Marys.
No, they never gave those out. Those are for the priests.
Right.
That's not nice. So, but here's my problem. And again, this comes back to the fact that there's justice for some people are brought to justice and, well, others aren't. And understand, look, I had a conversation with a red hat who was, you know, I don't care about the classified documents and all of this stuff. And his response to me bringing this up was, but Hillary. And that's always going to be the response from the right. Now, I'm not saying you don't pursue, but it's but Hillary. And how do you get around that?
I mean, I think to some extent when there are two different things here, where it's the politics argument and then it's the justice argument, the legal argument. And with the red hats, we've talked about this before, where it's like, you're never going to change their mind.
No.
Like, there's 33% of the country that will never, ever, ever believe anything that comes from the Democratic Party or from, you know, anyone that's not Donald Trump. And I think what we're seeing specifically with Jack Smith is he is still moving forward with the classified documents case. He's just removed Trump from it. So right now, the classified documents case is being appealed to the 11th Circuit because, you know, the Trump BFF judge dismissed it under the guise that Jack Smith was was improperly appointed as a special counsel. And so the Justice Department itself has to fight that if they ever want any kind of special counsel ever again. That means even for Hunter Biden, right? If they want to go after Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, you know, whenever Trump gets in office, then they're going to have to do it with a special counsel. And I mean, I guess they don't have to. They could just blow it all up and be like, no, we're intentionally going after them as the DOJ. But to maintain the legitimacy of any special counsel in the future, they have to have this move through the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals and have the 11th Circuit decide on it. So Trump may very well come back and pardon Carlos de Oliveira and Walt Nauta and say that, you know, their obstructions of justice are fine. But again, it's like, is it going to happen before the 20th? I would really hope that the 11th Circuit steps out and says, you know, actually, no, this was legally Jack Smith was legally appointed the way that he should have been, and these are going to move through, and then Trump will pardon them from there.
We'll see, and that's why I find this all very interesting. As someone told me, we're getting what we deserve.
Yeah, and I would say too, like anybody who has jury duty in the future, I would make an excuse that you don't believe in justice anymore because of Donald Trump. That may get you out of it.
That might get you out of it. There you go. If you're looking for a way. Sarah, as always, great stuff. I appreciate the work. Keep it up. Make sure you check out Sarah's work, rawstory.com. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Have a good week, everyone.
I want to hear your thoughts. Is this what we earned? All those people who stayed home, it's on you. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight with a few flurries and snow showers and lows in the mid-teens. For tomorrow, cloudy day, scattered flurries and snow showers, mainly in the afternoon and evening, highs into the mid-20s. More flurries and snow showers and windy for Tuesday night into Wednesday. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, justice. One of those things that makes you angry at a system that allows the wealthy and the powerful to walk away and to not be held accountable. Yet, you know, especially when you're talking about poor people, when you're talking about people who are struggling to make ends meet, they seem to get the incredible justice, the painful justice. And I never can get the story out of my head of a guy who stole 3 peppermint patties, the little candies. Stole 3 of those from like a corner store and spent over 500 days in jail awaiting a hearing. I can't help but think that way, especially when you see the very wealthy and the very powerful get away with the kind of things that they get away with. And understand, you know, this administration is going to be an outwardly so, a very corrupt administration. Only they're going to normalize it by going, hey, this is why you chose us. This is why you put us here to do all of this stuff. What we used to call criming, what we used to call immoral, what we used to call illegal, we're now going to call normal. We're going to call just another day. And this is where I had this conversation recently. Because I do believe out of this pain and suffering will be opportunity, and this is why I'm hopeful. This is why I'm positive. Because I believe in this country, I believe in the people of this country. I believe that most people, even my red hat friends, are decent, caring, loving Americans. They love their country, they love their families, they love their communities. I have to believe that, and I know that's going to get me some grief. But I do, because I know a lot of red hats who are decent people outside of the fact that they have voted for something that is immoral and I believe is going to be immoral, illegal, incomprehensible. But they've been sold this idea that the Democrats are evil. Not just wrong, not just policy side wrong, but evil. You know, I had one guy tell me, you know, Democrats, you know, drink the blood of babies. Where did you come up with that? Because that's what they're told. And as I've said on this show a number of times, you give someone enough time and enough repetition, you can get people to think whatever it is that you want them to. And this is what right-wing talk radio has been. This is what Fox News has been. This is what that whole ecosystem of right-wing insanity has gotten us. And understand, Democrats, the left, you know, labor, whatever, they never created platforms to compete. And I tell the story quite often of a local station that when Michael Savage got taken off the air because of contractual things, there was an opening and we offered a lot of money in advertiser dollars to fill that spot temporarily while Savage was off. You know, not even permanent, because I believe in those spaces, you need to talk to people. And I've said this for years. This is nothing new. Anybody who's paid attention to the program over the last 19 years knows I love talking to people I disagree with, because I want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear if their knowledge is more than just an inch deep. And then I want to have a discussion, because one, it's going to challenge their views, but it's going to challenge mine. And it's going to make me think maybe a little differently. And maybe we come to some common ground, because I used to believe, and Joe Walsh, the former Illinois congressman, and I have said to each other that we could sit down, have a beer, and we could figure things out. And I believe that wholeheartedly, because I don't want to believe that people are cold-hearted and want to see suffering. Now, are there? Yes, of course. But those are people that we don't want in government. It seems right now it's what this country has done. And as I was having this conversation, I asked the simple question of, you know, when did the civil rights movement turn? When did the country kind of make a change of direction? And I believe it was, you know, seeing Emmett Till in his casket. I believe it was Bull Connor and his tanks and his dogs being sigged on children. I believe it was, John Lewis getting his head split open on a bridge in the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. I believe it was the horrible that we witnessed. That was what we saw on our screens, in our homes, with our children watching, that made us say something is wrong. That made us say we have to act. And this is where I come back to. We are going to have to see this again. Now, the question, and this is the big question, will we see it? When they take the big bus and they go kicking in homes at midnight and they grab families out of their beds and out of their sleep and throw them into trucks and into vans to be whisked away to who knows where, will we see it? Will we know? Because if you look at the nominees that they're putting into place, these are all good old-fashioned loyalists. The fact that they want to use Schedule F to go and fire a lot of federal workers, thus weaponizing the federal government, not for the good of we the people, but at the expense of we the people. Because the loyalty pledge that these folks would take is not to you or me or the Constitution, but to dear leader, but to Donald Trump and the ideology. And this is the scary part for me. So the reason I've been saying this as long as I have, the reason I've been coming out and saying, look, the solutions are going to be in the savagery. The solutions will be in the suffering that we witness with our eyes, that we know someone in our family who's been harmed by one of these policies, the programs that are going to be slashed and burned when Doge Boy gets his wet dream and we go with an axe instead of a scalpel. People will be harmed. Lives will be lost. Families will be destroyed. And we should know that going in with eyes wide open, because this is what the electorate of this country decided. They knew who Donald Trump was. They know who he is. He said what he was going to do, and he's going to do it. And this is why, you know, as a Democrat, I would go give him his nominees. Give him the people that he wants. We have to see in order to believe. We have to experience and feel in order for the true change to happen, which is at some point we got to come back together. And only in crisis. I can't think of any other time in this country's history that the country has come together, that has united in any real significant way, other than out of chaos. The last time that I remember clearly was 9/11. Did not vote for George Bush, didn't like George Bush. But on 9/11, George Bush was my president. Wanted him to succeed, wanted him to do the right thing, believed that our system would pursue the right course of action. We now look back and go, didn't. So in this moment, and so I keep coming back to this frame and why I think it is so important. When this bad stuff happens, when American citizens are pulled out of their homes because someone turned them in as potential illegals, what do we do? What do we say? Do we remain silent? Do we do nothing? That's the question. You know, for bad things to happen, good people have to be silent. So all of the folks who've emailed me and said, Rick, you know, you've been kind of a downer, you know, you haven't said the sky's falling, but, you know, you say bad things are coming. Yeah, I believe bad things are coming. Now, I think I talked about this last week. And I've gotten a number of new emails reiterating the same kind of thinking. It's not going to be that bad, Rick. Sky's not going to fall. Sun will come out tomorrow. It's all going to be good. And you know what? Maybe some good policies. Maybe going to do some of the right stuff. He's actually talking about doing some of the stuff you want, Rick. Is he? What I see them talking about is antithetical to what I would like to see. Ripping us apart even further. Using our government against us. More privatization. More destruction. It's going to be hard to keep up. We have a corporate media that wants access. We have a corporate media that only cares really about the bottom line. We have a really powerful right-wing misinformation machine. So even when we see the horrible stuff that's going to happen, even when we see it with our own eyes, they're going to tell us we're not seeing it. Can't believe that. Can't believe your lying eyes. Even if it, as it happens to us. So as I said at the beginning, will it be enough? Will the suffering of others be enough for when it happens to us? And I look at myself, for instance. As everyone knows, my wife was involved in a motorcycle accident back in September. We are now looking at a broken healthcare system and trying to navigate a truly broken system. With the concern of what happens down the road. Because there's no safety net. Unless you're indigent. And then begrudgingly, there's help. You look at how we treat people at the margins. And look, I'm looking at potentially being at that margin as our resources are depleted, as we're taking care of my wife and as we're trying to take care of the family and keep everything going while I'm working sparingly. Because we don't leave my wife's side. Because our system is broken. And every day I sit and I watch the people do their jobs. And I help them do their jobs. Every day I sit and I think how all of these people who, you know, at some point in their lives were truly caring, compassionate souls who wanted to do the best and want to do the best for their patients. Were thrown into a system that basically created their failure. a system that never gave them the tools to be able to do what it is that they need to do. For me, it's systems that are set up for failure. And we have people who are now going to be running our government, the CEO class, who understand how you set up systems that are designed to fail, that are designed to squeeze as much profit as possible out of something while producing the least possible goods, but the highest possible profits. That's what our government is going to move towards. And when we come back, I want to share a little bit more on this because I don't want to make it sound like I'm beating up on nurses or the CNAs, the people who are the assistants or anyone who's working in the healthcare industry. But it's the system. It's the system that I want to talk about. So for me, it's angering. It's heartbreaking. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to share some more thoughts on what has been my experience thus far. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2001. That was the day that energy trading giant Enron filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. It was the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history up to that time. At its peak, the Houston-based Enron was the seventh largest company in the country. A combination of mismanagement and all-out greed sank Enron. The company used numerous accounting tricks and loopholes to hide billions of dollars of debt from its shareholders. In August of 2000, shares of the company were worth $90.75. But by November 30th, 2001, they had plummeted to just 26 cents. After filing bankruptcy, thousands of Enron employees were left to go down with the ship. Many employees and retirees had thousands of dollars worth of Enron stock. Employees were told the company would recover. They were encouraged not to sell off their stock and even to buy more, while at the same time, top executives were dumping their stock holdings. When the company went under, the employees' retirement accounts were wiped out. Some who had already retired had to re-enter the workforce. The following January, a New York Times report shared the stories of some of the 4,000 employees laid off in the immediate aftermath of the bankruptcy. One was told he lost his job by voicemail. Another was told he had 30 minutes to clear out his desk. Multiple lawsuits won a portion of the money back for Enron stockholders, but the employees lost more than $2 billion in retirement funds. In the end, more than 20 top executives were found guilty for the crimes they committed while running the company. Enron became synonymous with the corporate greed that has been the hallmark of 21st century America. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So again, I want to reiterate how much respect I have for people who work in the healthcare field. We have created an environment where it's got to be almost impossible, especially coming out of the COVID pandemic, where we told these people they were frontline heroes and essential and how much we loved them, and then, well, proceeded to try and screw them out of wages and overwork them and underpay them. That set aside, you get frustrated. Being in the situation that I'm, we have been by my wife's side now for over 11 weeks. She has not been alone for longer than any stretch of more than 2 hours during the entire time she's been hospitalized. And, you know, so we make sure that someone cares for her. We make sure that they're aware when a situation comes up. We make sure that when she needs something, she gets it. And understand, I wish every person had an advocate like our family has been for my wife. I wish everyone had the kind of situation that I'm very fortunate, extremely fortunate to be in, to have health insurance that will cover virtually anything that I need because it's paid for out of our health and welfare fund, not a big insurance company. The fact that I have a job that my seniority will be okay. and I'll be able to take the time that I need. And also the fact that I've made reasonable wages over the years, that I have a safety net in place that I can lose 11 weeks pay and still be able to care for our family. I know I'm privileged. I know I'm fortunate. And I want that for everyone. I want every person who's in that hospital to have someone by their side, fighting for them, making sure that they get what they need, because the system is so badly broken. And the thing that drives me crazy is that the system has trained these people who are beaten down, and I truly believe this, are beaten down by the fact that there's an insurance company, there's a policy. Oh, if I hear one more time, it's our policy. It's how we have to do it. It's what the insurance company demands. It's what, fill in the blank, the doctor, the administrator, the hospital, the insurer, it's what they want. And you get this Tina mentality. There's no alternative. This is it. This is the flow chart. Perfect example. My wife went in for surgery a couple of days ago to get some pins taken out of her wrist and out of her fingers. Minor surgery, you know, real quick, about 45 minutes, but they had to put her under, so they had to get an IV into her arm, which normally most people, no problem, put an IV in. Her left arm is completely, all the veins are worthless. They're all blown out. They're all overused. They're all basically unfindable. And every person who has tried virtually has failed. They now bring in this scanner thing, this ultrasound to try and find something. And they've had to do this a number of times because they're poking her constantly. So when we went in for the surgery, it took the anesthesiologist like a good 45 minutes to find somewhere to put the IV in so that they could perform the surgery. And when they pulled her out for recovery, I noticed that the IV was there, and it made me think, oh, gee, she's got an infection. I better call the hospital that she's at to see if they want to use that IV. Makes sense, doesn't it? Make sure that it's in there. Hey, that's a win. And maybe they're going to use that IV for the drip that they were talking about for the antibiotics. So when the nurse came into the recovery room and said, hey, I'm taking this out, I said, yeah, can you hold on? I want to make sure that the doctor at the other place doesn't want to use that. And she goes, oh, no, we have to take this out. And I'm like, no, you don't. It's going to stay. It's going to stay right there. Until I get the okay from this other doctor that they don't need it. Because if they need it, if they want to do a drip, it's staying. This woman, who, trust me, you know, until this moment was the most caring, one of the best nurses, a fabulous, just terrific. But so tunnel visioned on the policy. This is our policy. It's how we've always done it. That couldn't even agree with me. That it made common sense to look at her arm and how bad it is and look at the miracle that the IV in her, you know, right by her knuckle here was, and say this could benefit her overall care. The continuity of care could benefit from having this IV that they miraculously found and I feared they would not be able to find or get to again. And it became a whole big to-do and a whole push-pull where it didn't have to be, where you could, where someone, if it were me, I would go, well, let me check with somebody before I take this hard stance. Let me check, because you're right. That does make sense. It makes sense to leave that in so that if this other doctor needs it, you're able to use it. Long story short, the hospital that we were at, that we were going back to, didn't need it. So they were able to take it out, which meant that I didn't have to get tased or arrested or anything that was going to come out of it. But it got me thinking in this. And it's every step of the way. It's the system. And, you know, as I explained to my kids, you know, the reason that we're staying by mom's side is, one, we love her. We want to take care of her. We want to make sure that she's cared for and that she's not alone. And that when she wakes up, she sees us. That she knows that there's someone there for her. And two, that she gets the care she needs. Because understand, in the rehab hospital that we're on, I ask the nurses, who are almost almost across the board, travel nurses, not even working for the hospital. How many patients do you have? And at one point, someone told me 8, someone told me 9. They have one assistant. So you go one person, one RN to 8 or 9 patients. Like my wife, who can do literally nothing for herself. How much time in an hour can you give each patient? How much time can you give to making sure that they just haven't soiled themselves? That they need their medicine and medication. That, you know, maybe they need some comfort. Maybe they need a drink of water. Maybe they need someone just to talk to for just a minute. That is impossible because our system is so broken. It's so tunnel visioned. It's so profit motive, cost cutting conscious that it's infuriating. And I go through this and look, I'm not alone. I'm not unique. I'm not special in this. Because of the platform that I have here, I've had a lot of people reach out and say, my God, you know, this is what I went through. And the horror stories that I hear are heartbreaking. In the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, at its wealthiest moment, a country that spends more on healthcare than everyone else, we can do better. We should do better. We have to do better. Now, is it these individual nurses' fault that they're set up in a system where they're going to fail every day? And are we then surprised that they become jaded or hardened or what appears to be uncaring? No, we shouldn't be surprised at that at all. And I don't take it out on the nurses. Because I understand if I come to work every day and I know I'm not going to be able to do everything I need to do and I don't have the tools that I need to do to get do my job, I know, me personally, I'm gonna figure out how to protect my psyche, how to protect my mental well-being. And that is by just being detached. And I see this every day. And look, this isn't even the step down where they want to send her eventually, which is to a nursing home, which has its an entirely new set of problems. If you think 8 to 1 is bad, in the nursing homes, it's double. It's even more than that. Our system is broken. And look, I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I'm a Democrat. I believe in government because I believe government can solve problems. I do. But on the healthcare front, we have fallen down badly. We have left. And this isn't just because I'm going through it. This isn't just because our family is now seeing it firsthand. I've been talking about this stuff for years because I've been grateful that it's never happened to me. And now that it has, this is one of those moments where you have to speak up. These are moments not to suffer in silence. And across the board, this is not a time to suffer in silence. And I hear people say, well, I'm just going to duck and cover. I'm just going to tune out. I'm done with this. I'm never getting involved. I hear all of this stuff. This is not that time. This is not the time to surrender. Just not. This is the time to be active, to be engaged, to be angry. And you know what? It's okay to be angry. Because out of that anger may come some action. And that's what I'm hoping from you. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Freespeech.org for the video. It's all there. And for folks who want to send Carol a card, a note, something, The Rick Smith Show, P.O. Box 1026, Carlisle, PA 17013. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC